Hello and welcome to Web3 Delight podcast. My name is Teša Tešanović and I will be your host today. Web3 is not about technology. This is a social movement towards transparency, consensus, inclusiveness, ownership and openness. To that end, we'll explore different elements of Web3 with our guests and learn from their journeys. Why is Web3 the future of social media?
Yeah, so personally, I think that the future of social media and journalists is actually decentralized social media. And I believe that Web3 will actually play a critical role in decentralized social media, in particular monetization for content creators. And that could be, you know, through tokens or NFTs. But I think we should first explain how decentralized social media work, or at least the current models we have right now. So right now we have about three models for decentralized social media. And one of them is the lens type. If you heard about it, the lens is basically a platform or protocol where all the data for the social media platform is actually stored on chain. And people or developers, they can build front ends that basically retrieve the data from the chain and, you know, show it in that front end. That could be an app or it could be a website. And the front ends are usually in charge of moderating spam, and they actually have their own recommendation algorithm. So if you think about, you know, YouTube or Twitter, they usually have some kind of discovery algorithm where you get, you know, random tweets in your feed just so you can see new content that is not coming from your default feed. So these front ends are usually in charge of this sort of functionality, and what this means is basically there will be a dozen people controlling what you see, right? And these are people are going to be the people who are building the front end. And personally, I think that in the long term, it's not going to be as censorship resistant. And the reason for that is because a module where you basically all the data is stored on chain is bound at some point to be centralized, because all this data is going to be stored somewhere, and the blockchain that stores all this data is going to be growing in size into basically a size that is not that no one can run, right? The last time I checked the size of the lens blockchain was, I believe, in October of last year, and it was 350 gigabytes. And personally, I don't know a lot of people who can, you know, self-host this kind of people who have this kind of storage on their devices. So what you have, so if you wanted to use Lens, you would have to use an RPC to explain the RPC, the idea of RPC. RPC is just essentially, it's just an endpoint that you interact with, that you send your data to and retrieve data from. So it's the same idea with MetaMask. In the MetaMask, you actually sign the data locally, and you send it to RPC endpoint that could be Infora. Usually it's Infora. And Infora takes that information that you signed and broadcasts it to the network, essentially get your transaction to be submitted through the network. The problem is if you have a module where it's basically very difficult for most people to run their own node, which I believe Lens will be at some point, It's going to be bound to centralize, and users will have to rely on RPC endpoint to interact with the front end. And these RPC endpoints can be pressured, they will be, and we saw that already. And they can be pressured to be to censor authors or content or topics based on, you know, based on pressure like that is coming from a financial or regulatory perspective, right? So we saw that with Tornado Cash. In the case with Tornado Cash, after the United States sanctioned the smart contract of Tornado Cash, several RPC endpoints, including Infora, which is the most used RPC endpoint, started rejecting transactions that the users were interacting with Tornado Cash. So if you were basically sending money to Tornado Cash or receiving money from Tornado Cash and you were using Infora, you would get an error that says it's forbidden. You cannot use this smart contract. So I think of this as this downside of having a very large blockchain, that once you have a blockchain that is very large and, you know, you need basically a server or some kind of giga server to run it locally, it's bound to centralize because you get these endpoints that you basically everyone have to use. And Thora and other companies, usually US-based, have always engaged in censorship. This is not new. And Thora in particular, they don't allow users from sanctioned countries like Iran or Cuba or Venezuela to use their services. So if you try to install MetaMask in your browser and you are from one of these countries, and Thora will see that your transaction has this IP which is coming from you and will reject it immediately because you're from these sanctioned countries. So I believe this is extremely, I would say, antithesis of our in Web3 space. I think we're all here about permissionless and trustless, and everyone should be able to use any service they deemed. If I want to use a service, why should Infor or other service reject my request to use it? So from that perspective, I think we should have at least, I think we should have small blockchains or at least minimize the amount of data that is on the blockchain itself.
One of the biggest problems with social media is the problem of privacy and misuse of our data for commercial means. Can Web3 solve that problem?
Yeah, so I think privacy is extremely a big problem with a lot of multitudes, right? So I can't really give a specific answer, but I believe a key advantage of Web3 is that it reversed the way Web 2.0 has made the user a commodity. So right now, if you were registered on Google or Twitter or any of these websites, your data is bundled and sold off to advertisers or any other entities that are interested in this data. But with Web3, the data is handed back into the users that created that data. So decentralized web in that sense empowers users to basically determine how it can be shared. But I would like to continue with the types of social media because it's sure. Still I only went through one, but I may have
sure continue. Sorry for interrupting.
Too much. Sure. So there is a second type of decentralized social media, which is the Mastodon type, the federated type. So with each federated instance, they can communicate with each other. So if you were running your own Mastodon instance, you can talk with other Mastodon instance and share tweets or any kind of messages. Essentially, it's the same idea as the email protocols. So if you had an email like Gmail account and you sent someone an email who had Hotmail or Outlook email, they would receive because it's all following the same protocol, but it's different instance. But the problem with that kind of federated design is that usually the biggest federations can ban a lot of small instances. So if you try to send an email, if you try to self-host your own email service, so if you created your own domain and you had if you had a bunch of emails to send to people like in Gmail or Outlook accounts, that your email will actually be sent to spam or may even not reach the people you sent to because it's just because these kind of entities, they wield so much power that they can just censor about, anyone who has used these protocols. And I think the biggest issue with that also is that these federated instances, whether Gmail or Outlook or even Mastodon, every instance you use actually stores your data and actually can read it at any time. So in the case of Gmail, they can, they have your emails and they stored locally on their servers. And in the case of Mastodon, they have your tweets and all your basically interactions with people stored on their servers. And at any moment, they can decide to delete it. And they could also decide to, read your private content. In the case of Mastodon, the actual hoster or the one who is running the instance, they can actually look at the private messages that you are sending to other people, but just because you're using their instance. And I think the problem with Mastodon design is that it's not, once you give people, it's bound to centralize, right? Just because there's a huge incentive for centralization in general, because if you centralize a lot of, functionality in one place, it's very easy to monetize. So from that aspect, I think this kind of design, it's not going to work in the long term, at least from a Web3 perspective. And then there is the last type, which is the AT protocol and Nostrum, in which the user has the data stored locally, And then if you want to interact with other peers in the network, you would relay that data that you have to basically to instances. But and that these instances can also, you know, forward it to other instances. So similarly, it's the same idea what happens with MetaMask or Infora. So you have the data locked in your device and you're sending it to other instances that can take it to basically propagate it throughout the network. But I think a potential problem with that is that relays at some point they can decide that, okay, if you have this particular IP or you have this particular data that is coming from your device, then we're not gonna relay this particular data. But I think what is promising about this protocol, the AT protocol, is that it's not as resource intensive to run your own node. So it should be viable if you're running it on an old machine or a Raspberry Pi. So from that perspective, I think it's very empowering to the user. So even if you were a controversial figure, and a lot like all the relays in the NOS or AT protocol decide to censor you, they decided they're not gonna relay your data anymore. You can just run your own relay or pay someone else to do that for you, because the cost for doing so is extremely minimal. Personally, to give conclusion on this, I think the part that is needed for a decentralized social media to succeed is that first it needs to be a blockchain agnostic. That means the success of the platform itself, it shouldn't be tied to one blockchain or tied to one token or tied to one NFT collection, anything like that. I think all these technologies, with technology in general, they always evolve. And you don't want to get left behind just because your platform is essentially bolted onto this very specific technology. So I think the protocol should always be, should bear no risk in choosing the wrong technology and, you know, getting left behind. Second of all, I think they should be peer-to-peer, and the user data will always be stored locally. So the users have their essentially their data is stored on their local devices. That could be a hardware wallet or their own hard drive. So the data will not be stored, for example, in another cloud machine or any other instance. And users should be able to run their own node very easily, especially on an old machine or Raspberry Pi. Lastly, I think full interoperability with existing web technology is very important. So the platform itself shouldn't try to force user or content creators to use a specific token on NFT for tipping, or for not exactly tipping, it could be really anything. So instead, the platform should give content creators ownership of their content as well as their monetization. If you look at platforms like YouTube or Twitch or Reddit, they always have this very specific monetization schemes in which the content creator can only monetize through very specific means. That could be, usually it's advertising. And if you try to do any other type of monetization, you get banned or some kind of, you know, the demotion will happen. So I think in the case of, I think potentially for a decentralized social media web to succeed, they need to have this very, they need to give flexibility to content creators on how to monetize their content. Could be really in any way. So for example, the content creator, he could mandate that for users to interact with him, they have to have they have to have a particular NFT, right? If you wanted to send a message to someone who, you know, you're following, you have to have this NFT, or you have to have a certain token balance. So for example, if the content creator said, okay, I'm gonna launch my own token and I want people who want to message me to essentially have this token balance to send me a message, right? So basically the sky is the limit here. They could basically demand or mandate anything. And I think this is the way in which by content creators should be, you know, allowed to give basically full ownership and monetization of their own content. As we see right now with YouTube and other Twitch, it's extremely restrictive. And, you know, you have with YouTube and Twitch, you have all this list, a huge list of things that you're not, you know, you have to, basically you have all these rules you have to follow, and maybe these rules are not really relevant to you and your specific culture, but because the all these companies are stationed in the United States, so they have to basically follow the culture and regulatory expectation of the country itself. So even though if, you know, even if you're from a country that is not stationed, and then even if we're not even stationed in the United States, or you know, you would still, your content would still have to follow the expectation as if you were in the United States. So I think that you could also make a huge argument in that big tech censor, big tech including YouTube and Twitter, all these platforms, they censor people who are usually from sanctioned countries like Venezuela, Cuba, and sometimes even countries that need, you know, basic services, like for example GitHub. You know, GitHub is used for code sharing and stuff like that, and it's not you cannot use it if you are from one of these countries. And these countries especially, they need these services because they need to develop their economy. And big tech, what essentially they're doing is they're censoring their let's say less fortunate countries into, you know, staying that way. And I think it's not just a technology problem, it's also a social justice problem.
Technological sovereignty and owning the rights over profits over that data.
Yeah, definitely. So I think it is the, I would say, the result or effect of politics being, you know, tied or, you know, bolted on into technology itself. You know, at the beginning of the internet, we didn't have like stuff like this. People could post whatever they wanted because people ran their own websites, or, you know, they had their own platforms, or, you know, stuff like that. But right now, I think, you know, these tech platforms has been used as a political weapon in a lot of cases. And I think we saw it clearly with the case of MetaMask and Infora. You know, if you were from one of these sanctioned countries, then you can't use these services anymore. And I imagine, you know, in countries like even Russia, can't use these services too. So I think it's a real problem when you know, politics start, you know, being bolted or at least mandated into technology like this.
That's why the Web3 offers us here the opportunity to write out some of these things that are wrong with the current concept of social networks. But why so far the Web2 companies haven't managed successfully to delve into the Web3 space?
Yeah, so I think a lot of Web2 companies are usually interested in projects and spaces that increases their power and, you know, centralization in general, just because there's a huge incentive, especially financial incentive for centralization. And you can see that in the big push for AI these days, you know, because AI centralizes things because it allows one person to do the tasks of infinite people. And additionally, all the big companies with giga servers have access to a lot of data and can be in power. So essentially your average developer, or you know, your average AI developer or machine learning developer won't be able to train a module to do a specific task to the same effectiveness as, you know, Meta or Google or any of these big companies. All technology does that to some extent, but I think AI does it 10 times, you know, 1,000 times more efficient than regular programs. And whether the tech is open source or not, and, you know, whether it was allowed to use by anyone, I think it would still consolidate power to the few with the best AI robotic, or, you know, technology that, you know, I think increases centralization. So that could be AI or robots or data, you know, scraping and all of these basically technology aspect. But I think in general, Bitcoin and, you know, other cryptocurrency and peer-to-peer technology in general, I think in the internet, they decentralize power. And if you look time and time in history, we will see that it always improved the human experience. We saw that with the invention of the radio, people could communicate with one another. That always helped. That always been a big positive benefit to all the humankind. You can see that also with the internet, right? They always have this great positive impact because it can be used by anyone to communicate information that is not restricted, or basically you have to pay a certain price to look at it or use it in any way. And that always helps the, let's say, the less fortunate in society, because if you were if you were in a case where if you were a part of let's say less fortunate part of society, right, and you didn't have, for example, the money or the access for if you wanted to access, for example, a scientific journal or something like that, and you had to pay money to do something, you had to pay money to access it, right? But contrast that with peer-to-peer technology, in which someone can share that scientific journal to everyone for free. Now that would open up a lot of opportunities, in particular for social justice, because it would make all people, give access to all people, access to the same data. So essentially it levels the playing field. I think peer-to-peer and cryptography technology in general is that, it's one of the technologies that will improve the human experience in the long term. It could also be open source AI and open source data sets in general, but I think what we have right now is, especially with ChatGPT, it's not open source. And I think it's just essentially just, a plot or, a way to garnish as much financial and, power to their shareholders as quickly as possible. But honestly, I think one of the worst things that could happen in technology is that the usage of technology to censor or ban people, in particular, banning people if you're, over sanctions or any other restriction, because if you're not able to use the technology, just because if you're from a specific country, I think it's extremely I would say sad to see, it's just step back in the over outlook of things.